News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 10th of July, Anno Domini 2005, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. We're just going to have plenty of fun today. You'll notice that Dave Enright is conspicuous in his absence. He's on his motorcycle, I think, one vroom vroom ahead of the law somewhere in the great Canadian Northwest. I'm sure he'll be back as soon as he eludes the Mounties. So we're going to start. I have to talk about something that has almost nothing to do with computers. Thursday, I was at the auditorium, and there's an architect there, Mr. Morse, Peter Morse, and Kim Powderly of Saukey Brothers took me around and showed me the place. I, as some of you may know, I spent 20 years as a professional actor, which I think explains a lot. But they showed me around, and of course everybody knows about the auditorium, the theater in the auditorium. What I didn't know, and I am embarrassed to say this, there are five theaters in the auditorium. There's the small one upstairs that Stages is using, which is quite lovely, and you should check out Stages if you
you can use them for weddings now.
Yeah, there's another little one next door. The fifth floor has a 1,000-seat place with a couple of daises spread around it, but the fourth floor has a 1,000-seat auditorium, balcony, boxes, full fly space with rigging. It's unbelievable. And yes, there's an auditorium. Oh, I'm sorry, Kim, I don't have the thing. Auditorium, not productions, auditorium, not catering, auditorium something. And they actually do the, they do weddings and stuff there. It's very cool. But the woodwork is beautiful. The chandeliers are gorgeous. It's just a beautiful theater. I have to say, I started to drool. If I could, I'd be putting shows on in that place every weekend. It's just, and I didn't even know it was here.
That's probably why they call it the Auditorium Center, because there's
Auditorium Center.
More than one.
That's what it's called.
Yeah,
I was just very impressed. It was quite fascinating. I want to thank those folks for showing me around again, and it was just who knew? Who knew this was sort of stuff was even there? I'm just you did, of course, because you don't really have a life, and you just wander around downtown, getting into buildings and seeing what's there. But the rest of us who have lives didn't know this, but now I do.
The rest of us just remember how what a pain it is to try to find parking space when you're trying to go to something at the odd.
Well, that's it. You got to go early, and then you get a very good parking space. So they have handicap spots. I'm a happy man if I get there early enough. We're going to go right to the phones because there are lots of people waiting already. We're going to start with Bob from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Well, my computer can't boot. I have an error message that says Windows cannot start because the following file is missing or corrupt. Windows/system32/config/system.
That's the main operating system file.
Right.
Has somehow become corrupt or damaged. Sometimes, if you're really, really, really lucky, you can copy that file from another computer. Or off the original disks. Usually what you'd need to try to do is reinstall Windows
on top of
Windows, and sometimes that can work. It depends on how the corruption or damage was started in the first place. A lot of times it means your hard drive is beginning to fail, and that was the first noticeable file that that disappeared off the failing hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
There are also several viruses that will delete Windows system files. Although most of the viruses want your Windows to keep running so they can propagate more, so there aren't that many that that actually delete stuff.
Right, a virus that essentially kills its host isn't a very good virus, but as we know, there are a lot of those
out
there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, most of those files are too big to fit on a floppy, so it's a little tricky trying to copy them from another machine. So usually the easiest first step is to reinstall Windows. What version of Windows is it?
It's XP.
When you boot the Windows XP installation disk, there's a first option to repair Windows or install Windows. You want to pick install on that step and then follow the couple of prompts down. There's a later prompt that says repair Windows, and that will install Windows over top of Windows.
So you need to read each screen carefully. I know that when we do an installation, we just tend to keep hitting enter until we stop being annoyed by it. But in this particular case, you really need to read every screen and understand it. Pick install the first time, repair the second time.
And Dave, I'm looking for it now. Dave has a tip on his Dave's tips on the website on how to install Windows XP over top of Windows XP. The advantage there is that you get your Windows back and working without losing any of your applications. If you have to install Windows XP from scratch, it also forgets about any applications you have loaded, and you'll need to reload those applications as well.
The problem that I have is the only disks I have are the ones that will restore everything.
Yeah.
Sometimes the restore disks will let you reinstall just Windows itself.
But very rarely. The problem is that it's much, much less expensive for a company to just send you a reinstall disk, which basically has an image of the hard drive as it was in its initial state. That way, if there's a problem with the system and they have you bring it back to the original state and it works, then they're done. You know, they knew it worked that way when it left the building, and if it still works that way, it's not a hardware problem, it's your fault. But doing that, running that restore disk will wipe out everything you've put on the machine, including all of your data.
And so, I can't afford that because I've got 2 days of stuff that I didn't back up.
Yeah, they know, I think, that when you don't have a backup of critical data.
Yeah, don't say that.
Yeah. Generally there you can buy a full Windows installation CD, or you can take it into a shop and they can use their installation CD with your serial number in order to try to reinstall Windows. And if it is a deeper problem of the hard drive failing, then we can pull your hard drive out, put it in another computer, and see what data can be recovered.
Yeah, it really looks like you're pretty much at the point where you can't fix this yourself. You're going to have to talk to another
vendor. Yeah, especially if you don't
somewhere.
Have the Windows install disks. It's very annoying. Sometimes we've heard of scattered success in calling some of the bigger companies, you know, HP and Compaq, that include these restore disks, and calling them and asking them for a Windows install disk, and they may do it if your machine is still new enough to qualify.
Yeah. But very rarely. Give that a shot, Bob. Call a good, reputable local vendor and get yourself done. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
From PCs to Macs, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is indeed Soundbites. We're going to go to John now from Penfield, New York. Welcome, John.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I'm running XP Home Edition.
Mm-hmm.
With I got five different users set up on it. If the computer sits idle or someone just logs off to the screen where you got the five logons, mm-hmm. I lose the connection for Internet Explorer. I also use Mozilla. And also the Outlook Express loses its connection, so if you click on it, it can't find a connection. But the remote access will work, and the different antivirus program will update and connect to the Internet. If I go to the network repair and run the repair,
right.
Get back the Outlook Express, but don't get back the either Internet browser unless I reboot.
How do you connect to the Internet?
Broadband, Roadrunner.
The Internet's usually all or nothing.
Yeah,
all programs work or no programs work. So it's
when I was just sitting here, I had it going and did a repair and got back the Outlook Express. But when I was sitting here, it dropped to the screensaver, and I lost it again, did Outlook repair. And it brought it back.
Did you used to do dial-up on this machine?
No, never. Now, I'm running the antivirus you get through Roadrunner, the Computer
right.
Associates.
Right.
I'm using Zone Alarm, and also I have that the Microsoft their anti-spyware.
Right.
And I've always run those, probably run the three of those for the last couple months, and this just started in the last week or two. Now, one of them may have updated, and I don't know, you know, if something changed there, but.
It almost sounds more like something in the operating system, not in the internet connection, because some internet programs still work.
Yeah, this is very weird. You use both Mozilla and Internet Explorer?
Yeah.
And it happens with both?
Yes, it does.
How about that?
If you go to the control panel and open up Internet Properties and go to Connections,
right?
What's there?
Is there more than one connection?
If I had all the right windows open for you, it's your internet connection.
Yeah, there should only be one connection there for your
or no connections. Well, right. If you have anything in dial-up and VPN settings,
is it under internet options? You said
yeah, under internet properties
connections. There's nothing there.
If you go down to LAN settings, what's connected there?
Do not apply to dial-up. LAN saying do not apply to dial-up connections.
Which
I click
I don't
on
have
it.
Any thereof.
Local area network settings, and there's really nothing highlighted or anything.
Yeah, I'd be interested to check your network control panel and see how many network connections you have. There should only be one for the Ethernet card, not if you have more than one Ethernet card connection when you've only got one card, it may be forgetting which card to use.
Right. What it sounds like is some of the programs are picking something that doesn't exist. So you need to do a little detective work and see if there's more than one setting in any one of those places and get rid of everyone that doesn't include your real connection. Give that a try and let us know because I'd be interested in knowing what you got from that one. Our next
there's call, also, like I said, there's also Dave's got a another one of Dave's tips is his TCP connection or TCP wizard, or not wizard fix. There's a bug in some of the XP TCP stacks, and he's got a link to a TCP fix problem.
Right, because particularly if you've updated, that's one thing we didn't ask John is if he's updated from say 98 to home, that old version of the TCP stack may still be in there, and this update would fix that. Good thought. Our next caller is Richard from Livonia. Welcome, Richard. What's your question?
I have a lot of questions, I think. I just bought a new computer, not real computer literate. And I loaded on a bunch of, for instance, Adaware and all that kind of stuff. When I got where I wanted to be, I bought Ghost, the 9.0.
Uh-huh.
I loaded that on, and then I tried to make a copy of my hard drive.
Yep.
When I did that, it took forever. When I did it, I got an error message. It says EA3907AO. The internal structure of the PQI is invalid.
When you ran Ghost, did you run it from a boot disk or from inside Windows itself?
When I ran it,
Did you reboot the system to the original Ghost disk?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, there's two ways you can run Ghost. You can double-click on it and start it up from inside Windows.
Oh, I probably did it.
Yeah, that's wrong. The problem is Windows can't be running on the system that you're trying... Ghost shouldn't be running on the system you're trying to ghost.
Okay.
If you're trying to do the whole hard drive, there's a boot... somewhere in the directions for your Ghost is how to make a boot disk.
And the CD install disk.
The CD install disk should do it.
That may even boot itself now that CD booting is so
right.
common.
Right. So you're supposed to boot from the Ghost CD itself and copy the CD that way, as opposed to running it from inside Windows.
Yeah, you can't copy your active Windows system.
Right, because you'll get errors, which in fact you got. So that's the problem that you ran into. So reboot using that Ghost disk and follow the instructions there. It should work for you then. The only other time you'd have a problem is if there were something actually wrong with your hard drive, and that's a, believe me, that's a separate thing at a separate time. We're going to take another quick break. We've got news and we've got stuff coming up, and of course the little economic dramas we call commercials. And when we come back on the other side of that, we have things we're going to talk about. We have more of your calls, and we'll be abusing Rob as we always do. So back in just a couple of minutes on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Have you ever
4 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites, a little memorial hesitation there for Dave.
Who's, I'm just waiting for him to say it. And oh, wait, he's not here.
He's not here. Exactly. Exactly. Back to the phones. We're going to talk to Ron from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Actually, I don't have a question. I have an answer for an earlier caller.
Oh, perfect.
The caller with the Windows System 32 config system error.
Yeah, first caller, Bob from Penfield.
Yes. I ran into that about a week ago, and there's a Microsoft Knowledge Base article on it. It's 307-545.
Okay.
And basically it runs you through about three pages of you use your recovery disk to get to the command prompt.
No one ever makes a recovery disk. So that, well, that sort of blows the first step right away.
I should say not the recovery disk, but the disk usually that the OEMs provide for you where you can get to the command prompt.
Yeah, if he's got that, yes.
Okay. Yeah. But it did say that if you have an OEM installed, that you should refer to their site. And the system I was working on was a Dell, and they had an article which was almost identical to the Microsoft's. That was HO106-8335. But it did work, except that Tuesday I will be replacing the hard drive because that's why.
Well, that's the first thing Steve said, is that it's often a symptom of a dying hard drive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I ran scan disk on it a few times, and the hard disk is on the way out. But it was about a three-page process to copy files and replace files and boot into safe mode. And
yep. Well, that's great, Ron. Thank you so much. This is my favorite part about the show, is when other users call in and help us out and actually give the correct answer sometimes, which is so rare here. I love that. That is an interesting problem. Microsoft does have a problem with that, which is that there are so many different manufacturers who do so many different things to differentiate themselves in a fairly generic marketplace that they end up with 40 sets of instructions for the same thing, or here's the way we do it. Go to your manufacturer's site to find out how they do it, and then hope that the manufacturer put up something similar.
Yeah, and this is a fairly complex procedure, not for the faint of heart. There's a lot of typing command line commands.
Right.
And if you misspell something, it makes it worse.
Right. One of the things that you learn when you're playing around in the command line is don't take anything for granted. Read each line twice, sometimes three times. Spell it out to yourself. Typos can be very dangerous. In the command line. That's why one of the things we suggest is you take the machine to a reliable vendor and let them do it. Before we get back to the phones, there are a couple of lines open if you want to call in. Before we get back to the phones, Steve has a rant, something to say for the...
Well, if you've been following the Mac news in the last few weeks, you may be aware of the fact that Apple announced in early June that they were going to be switching their Macintosh computers from the current IBM Motorola PowerPC family into the Intel processors. They haven't said Pentium yet, so it may be the Itanium, it may be the Xeon, it may
Pentium
be something else.
Pentium D.
Yep.
They're using the D. What? Let's talk about a dead-end processor. That's what the D stands for, dead-end.
Well, and there's all kinds of rumors and speculation about future chips Intel is coming out and the Intel roadmap. And one of the things that Jobs mentioned several times during the announcement was the roadmap, which is basically a company's plans for the future. And the Intel roadmap was better than the PowerPC roadmap for future generations. And Jobs is looking forward to the next 10 years of Macintosh development. And this is the same sort of decision we went through 10 years ago. in 1994 when we switched. I keep saying the euphemistic we.
Yeah, right.
When Apple
well, that's
switched.
The difference between Mac and Windows people. When you're a Windows person and you think of IBM, you think them, as in them versus us.
Yeah.
When you're a Mac people, it's all one big loving,
big happy community,
or just commune.
Commune, right? So 10 years ago, when Apple switched from the 68,000 family to the PowerPC family, that was a huge processor transition. And in fact, Apple's the only company basically to have survived three such transitions, right, from the Apple II to the Mac and from the Mac to the Power Mac. And now everyone is calling the new processor machines are going to be a Mactel. As opposed to, you know, Macintosh on Intel. So there were a lot of speculation about which Intel chip they're going to be using. The seed machines that developers are getting now are using a Pentium 4 at 3.6 gigahertz. And one of the big reasons that Jobs pointed out was that Intel chips are use less power, fewer watts, and generate less heat. And so it's a lot easier to put them into laptop computers, for example. And the IBM G5 is just so big and so hot, they couldn't put it in a laptop.
In fact, one of their systems is water-cooled.
Liquid-cooled. It's antifreeze.
Yeah.
Big warning signs on it. If you see liquid, unplug it and run away.
Run away. Stop breathing, unplug it, and run away.
Right. It isn't really caused. It's basically the antifreeze in your car. Same sort of stuff.
Right.
Because of the heat generated by the PowerPC to get the performance out of it. And no one has disputed that the PowerPC has a better performance than the Intel at a lower clock speed, which is why we're seeing, you know, the Intel G5 is at 2.7 gigahertz and the IBM G5 at 2.7 gigahertz, the Intel P4 at 3.6 gigahertz, and you get about the same performance. So it was a really stunning move, Apple switching to Intel. A lot of people are saying we're you know, sleeping with the enemy and all this big mess. Well, now to complicate matters, IBM this week at a trade show in Tokyo announced the new dual-core PowerPC G5, their 970 MP, which is the 970FX is what Apple's using in the current Power Mac G5s. It has two cores inside each processor, which is the same thing that Intel is going to be moving to in there with the Pentium D for dual core.
Right.
And also a low power notebook version of the chip that only consumes 16 watts versus the Pentium's 27 watts. So it's really weird that Jobs must have known this when talking with IBM before making the Intel announcement and still went with Intel. So now after all the furor of the Intel switch has sort of died down a little bit, it's all coming back again. So why didn't he pick, you know, the G5
right,
chip and it's
well and
mess.
If he had to go with an Intel system, why didn't he go with AMD, which has a better way? But never mind. Anyway,
it's
going to
be a year before we see an Intel based computer.
Right.
So we're going to see more PowerPC based Macs before then.
Right. We're going to be back
confusing.
In just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. All of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When you wake up, America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Our next caller is John from Fairport, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Good. I just bought a new computer. Very, very inexpensive one. It does not have a 3.5-inch floppy drive in it.
Right.
And I'm thinking about getting a USB 3.5-inch floppy drive.
Right.
Do they work?
Yes, they do. What version of Windows are you running?
It's XP Home Edition.
You should be fine.
The USB drives are a little slower than a real internal floppy drive.
Yeah, but we're talking about floppies.
Right. Floppies are so slow and so small in capacity, they're of such limited usefulness, and is one of the reasons companies have stopped including them. You can get a 1 megabyte floppy drive is $50. A 200 megabyte flash drive is $50. So most people have gone to flash drives or keychain drives to transport small files around. Or email. Email basically killed the
floppy.
What
is it you need a floppy drive for?
Well, I have never put any information on my hard drive. I've always kept it on floppies.
Mm-hmm.
And that way when my hard drive fails, I haven't lost everything that I've accumulated.
Well, yeah, it'll take approximately 80,000 floppy disks to back up a modern small hard drive.
Well, I think he's talking about his data rather than...
And that was one of the other reasons the floppy was abandoned, because it takes so many floppy disks to back up so much data.
You're recommending one of those little thumb memories.
Right, yeah, they're much faster and much greater capacity for the same price as a floppy disk.
But on the other hand, one of the problems with floppy disks is that they are fairly fragile in terms of data retention. They can lose data pretty quickly. They get a little warped, they get a little old, they get hot and cold, and bang, the rust falls off the substrate, and you're done.
Permanent are these, what they call thumb drives?
Well, yeah, that was my next point. These will last you 5-10 years, but even they will eventually die. So there is no permanent thing other than, say, even CDs. Even if you burn a CD, you got to reburn it every 5 years or so, because they, particularly if you don't keep it in a dark,
and if you buy the really cheap
dry
media.
Environment, right, or you buy the cheap media. So there's nothing permanent. Except, I suppose, a second hard drive, and then every time you buy a new PC, you dump the data onto that hard drive and dump the data onto that hard drive and hope you don't get a bad one at any point. Nothing is certain, but in terms of both speed and capacity, certainly the little thumb drives, the jump drives, whatever you want to call them, are a way better deal than a floppy drive. But if you're used to floppies and floppies have worked for you, and you don't mind the possible occasional bad one, you're good to go with that. And certainly a USB floppy drive, or you can take a look at a USB zip drive, which is also faster and also has a higher capacity.
Right. We're seeing also, depending on what type of files you want to back up, if you're just doing word processing files, then a floppy drive or flash drive is enough. But if you're getting into digital pictures or even digital video, then even a CD doesn't hold very much. And
at that point, an external USB hard drive.
USB 2.
Right. Yeah,
USB 1 hard drives are god-awful slow.
Right.
Now, USB 2 hard drive or FireWire hard drive, and that gives you the option of having a removable media, so you unplug it from your computer and put it in your FireSafe.
Right. Yeah, I do. I do a lot of my stuff. I used to do a lot of my stuff to the little thumb drives, but now mostly I have them available to me under secure digital copy.
I've got a new thumb drive from PNY. We got it at the Ham Fest.
Ooh.
It was like $15, some ridiculously cheap price.
Ooh.
And it's got blinky lights on it.
Blinky lights. All right, now we're talking. See, that's the whole point of the toys. It's not just the toy, it's the blinky lights.
There are some flash drives I've seen. This model doesn't have it. Some flash drives have a locking tab on it, like
yes.
The old floppy disks.
Yeah, mine does. Mine is.
Yeah, so you can lock the data so you can't accidentally delete it.
Yeah, pretty nice stuff.
Blinky lights are cool.
Listen, we live for the blinky lights. All right.
This has neck lanyard straps are the latest geek thing to wear
To wear your flash drive. Yeah, or put it on your keychain. Our next caller is Al from Rochester, New York. Al, do you like the blinky lights?
I love them.
See?
Okay.
As long as they keep blinking.
Exactly. Yeah. What's your question, Al?
I just like a little differential in regards to antivirus software programs. There's McAfee, there's the Roadrunner,
sure.
Easy Armor, there's Norton's, and there's AVR. Out of those four, which do you prefer?
For a standalone home machine, I prefer McAfee of those four. I have recently begun using AVG, testing it because
AVG,
it is...
AVG, that's the one yeah. I'm...
All right. AVG, I'm using it myself. In fact, I'm soaking in it now. I happen
no
to
one
like
remembers
it.
That commercial anymore.
Yeah, I know. I'm old, and I know. But I like it because it's free. You know, it's free and it's easy to use, and it's a pretty nice product. Updating is pretty simple. It's automatic. They seem to be catching everything. Free is not a bad thing. I'm a cheap son of a gun, and I admit it. And
a lot of the ISPs are including free antivirus programs now, like Roadrunner and AOL
right.
do. So it's six and one half dozen the other. It's very difficult to make a personal choice.
Right. If I'm going to pay for one, I'll pay for McAfee. If I'm going to get a free one, Easy Armor is good if you're getting that free with your ISP or I like AVG. So there you are, a completely non-definitive answer. We're going to take another quick break just to make Rob Linton happy, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on 1180 WHAM.
Now back to Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And Rob, you're smiling.
He sounds like he's got a lisp when he says Steve's name on that one. I'm sorry. Not that a lisp is bad. It's just funny. I'm just whatever.
Then there's the one later on where he's got the hiccup.
The hiccup.
It's been how many years we've been here and the hiccup has been there. It's become it's now kind of an institution. If we didn't hear and Steve Ray, I don't know if we'd know we were where we were or what we were doing. We're going to go back to the phones now. We're going to talk to Tony, patiently waiting on a cell phone. Tony, tell me you're pulled over on the side of the road.
I'm actually home because it's just a thing where I got my cell phone used. Right here.
Cool.
Hey, question for you. I got this PC, and it was given to me, and it's a password protect, you know, which tells me to log on, and I wanted to change that, or I've got an operating system disk, you know, I might have to just wipe it, but isn't there an easier way in DOS to be able to change the password so that I can get on the desktop?
You have to know what the password is in order to change it, so the easiest thing is to call up the person who gave it to you and ask them what the password is.
Yeah, I don't know who the person is.
Okay, that kind of makes it hard, Tony.
Really?
You can certainly wipe out the system. You can also bring it to a local vendor, and they will do it for you. They can do that part for you.
We had an issue this week. We have to be a little careful about that because if someone brings in a computer in someone else's name, the first assumption is that it's been stolen.
Right.
So we have to bring a bill of sale to prove that you bought it.
Right.
And then we call up who you bought it from and complain to them that they should have erased it before they sold it.
Right.
The person you got it from should have some idea of what the password is.
It's like a third party thing. It's like somebody gave it to somebody, and I don't know that first person.
All right. Well, I don't know quite what to tell you at this point. The only thing you'd be able to do at this point is wipe the system out entirely and reinstall everything, unfortunately.
I try to do that. I have a disk of an operating system, and it just doesn't seem to want to locate the contents of the operating system disk so that I can load the new operating system.
What system is on the computer now, and what system is your disk?
It's NT, and I'm going to be using an ME. I have an ME disk.
That's why you can't read it.
Yeah, that's why you can't read it.
The NT OS formats it into NTFS, which ME cannot read.
Really?
Yep.
So I've got to stay with NT then.
Or you have to go into FDisk and repartition it as a FAT32, deleting the NTFS, or it's going to say non-DOS partition because it won't know what the NTFS is.
Oh.
So you can delete the partition that's on there and make a new one that ME can read.
So you FDisk it, okay.
Right. Yeah, and then delete that partition that it finds.
Right. Basically, you get rid of all the partitions. Doing that completely wipes out everything that was ever on the system, ever.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't mind doing that.
Right, no. and then you can move on from there. But let me just say this as a general thing to everybody. If you get a PC, the first thing you need to ask is what are the passwords? And if the other person doesn't have the passwords, I'd be a little leery myself personally.
True.
But, because you're at the very least, you're going to be stuck in the same position that Tony is, which is can't use the system until he completely wipes everything out.
Yep.
The other part of the problem I got to give you here, Tony, is ME is an old and now fully unsupported operating system.
Really?
You'd be way better off going out and getting a new version of XP Home.
Okay.
Because using ME, you're just going to run into a lot of security problems that Microsoft isn't going to support anymore.
Oh.
And if you're going to put this machine on the internet, I'd really worry about using ME if I were you. I'd move to XP and do it right the first time.
Great. That sounds like good advice there, boys.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Keep smiling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I still have a problem.
I see that so often. For everyone thinking of selling or donating your own computer, erase it. Take your files off of that computer before you give it out, because someone else is going to have your files.
Right.
Those restore disks that erase the hard drive that we tell people not to run.
Right, exactly.
When you're getting rid of the computer, run the restore disk.
Well,
erase the hard drive.
And the problem is, depending on which version of Windows you're running and what end user license agreement you're under, you can't give them an operating system with the drive, or you have to give them an operating system with the drive, or...
And you have to write a letter to Microsoft proving or asking for transfer of ownership.
Right, because a transfer of use, because you don't own it. Microsoft still owns it. But, you know, if you're gonna buy a PC, this goes hand in hand with my continuing problem with getting restore disks. Make sure you get a real version of the operating system, whether you're buying it new or used. and make sure that you know every single password to that system. A lot of systems also have passwords on the BIOS so that you can't add or remove or change anything in the BIOS. And that also can cause some serious problems if at some point down the road you have to make changes to the hardware setup in the system. You really need to be a lot more wary of what you buy and from whom you buy it. I'm afraid that that's just you know, it's the same thing as when you buy anything. You got to know who you're buying from. We're going to take another break. Joan Hildebrandt, the great Joan Hildebrandt, in with the news. Back later on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray. Stupid headphones keep falling apart when I try to put them on.
And I'm Rob Linton. Boy, you know what?
I'll tell you what. Joan, and maybe I'll take these.
Bunch of clowns around this place. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I got to tell you,
folks, fun.
I've said it. Well, they're not hooked up to anything. I have to say, I've said this 100 times before, and it is really too bad that we can't just, you know, stay on the air instead of doing the... We have more fun during the breaks.
Well, people can watch the camera. You know what you guys should do is figure out a way to hook up the audio on that thing, but then we'll have to be all sorts of careful of what we say during the commercial breaks.
Well, and that's half the fun, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. People can watch. I wonder what they're saying.
Yeah,
I could stream a live video feed instead of the 10-second update, but our network connection there is pretty saturated.
I was going to say,
I don't think we're going there.
Get some new gerbils on the wheels on that thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll be doing a bunch of other stuff later on, and certainly we'll be taking more of your calls. But first, I want to do my little rant today, and then we're going to talk a little bit about our website. First, let me remind you of a few very important things. What's today? Today's Sunday.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, we, the Soundbites crew, and that's Dave and Steve and Rob and me, we will all be at the Greece Public Library from 7 to 9 p.m. and then probably out in the parking lot afterwards. We're going to do basically Soundbites on the road. We're going to go there and talk to folks and maybe show up a couple of things. Maybe Steve will bring some cool toys for those of you who have not yet seen a Mac Mini. And there are far too many of you who haven't. Maybe you could bring one of those along and we'll show that off. I'll bring my my eBookWise book reader maybe, if I remember. God knows, it's my brain. I'm old now. But yeah, we're going to be out at the Greece Public Library at Vince Tofany Boulevard. They're just
off of Long Pond, north of
Long Pond, north of Latta. And we'll be there from 7 to 9, the Greece Public Library. So if you've got a free evening and you want to come and play with us, that's the place we're going to be. We're going to have some fun. It's going to be an interesting evening. We're going to just be even more freewheeling than we are here because we can be. I also want – so please join us. I would love to see each and every one of you there. I don't know if we can get 100,000 people into the Greece Public Library, but let's try. Let's try.
Yeah, I think they're already giving us the bigger room.
Yeah, I think so. So we'd love to see you out there. Please join us. It will be so much fun. I do want to remind you also that tomorrow, or Tuesday rather, that's Monday. So now that's Monday is at the Greece Library. Tuesday is update day. Microsoft, once a month, the second Tuesday of every month, they release their critical updates to cover critical flaws in the Windows operating system and Microsoft Office software. So Tuesday is update day.
And they wait a whole month.
It's called Patch Tuesday. This month, there are at least three critical software patches being released to cover critical flaws in both Windows and Office. It's also planning to release, Microsoft is also planning to release an updated version of the Windows software removal tool. As you may all know, when you remove a piece of software from Windows using add remove programs, it often doesn't remove everything. You often are left with a bunch of junk all over the registry, and files don't get deleted, and directories don't get deleted, and people are afraid to go in and do that stuff, and rightly afraid to go in and delete them by hand, because you never really know. These patches, which Microsoft calls updates, are part of the monthly release cycle. There are no specific details on the nature of the patches, but they have said that some of them will be rated criminal. Well, there's a Freudian slurp if ever I've heard one. Some will be rated critical. A criminal patch.
Sometimes an update is just an update.
So, and of course, you're going to have to restart your computer, which is always a good idea with a Windows box anyway. So administrators probably are going to have an easier time of this with these patches than with some of their predecessors, because there are fewer of them. And so what often happens is those of us who administer thousands and thousands of systems, unless we have a product that pushes out the updates for us, we find ourselves having to go from machine to machine to do it. And it's you really don't want to do that if you got a lot of machines. But people with just a few machines aren't going to be able to afford things like SUS or MOM or any of that stuff. And so they have the patches coming out. So if you're a Windows user, be prepared. It's Patch Tuesday coming up.
And for everybody else, the internet will be really slow that day, more slower than usual.
Yes.
Because of everyone else downloading these updates.
Yes. So luckily,
you may not even know you're downloading them, because XP now downloads them by itself without telling you.
Right, and just tells you it's installed them, or it's about to install them, or you know, yeah, whichever it's the setting is for. So yeah, it's definitely Update Tuesday. So I'd be Patch Tuesday. So I'd be prepared for that if I were you. Might be a good day to just unplug yourself and go do something analog for the evening. Certainly Monday night, a lot of people will be free, because they'll be at the Grease Library with us rather than sitting around on their computers. So too bad they won't be available then. Before we get back to the phones, we've got Gene Cells. Oh, Gene on a cell phone, Mike from Greece. And we'll be back to you guys in just a minute. But before we do that, I want to talk about what goes on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about my preferred CPU manufacturer. 342 of you voted, making it number 74 on the all-time hit list. I want to thank each and every one of you. The winner was AMD, I'm delighted to say. I'm a big fan of AMD's chips. With 39% of the vote, closely followed Intel right on their heels with 37% of the vote. 18% of you were honest and said you don't care. 4% of you said Motorola, and 2% of you said other. Only 3 of you said Zilog. I'm very depressed. I got berated all over the place. A lot of angry emails. Stop email. A lot of angry emails about the fact that I once again dissed all the Mac people. I do want to apologize for forgetting that IBM is the sole manufacturer of the 970FX, or the G5 as it's called. But I do want you to know that Motorola did make every other PowerPC processor that was ever in any Macintosh ever. So they were on the list, and only 12 of you voted for them. So,
and that basically goes to what I said, I don't care.
Right.
And most people don't know what CPU is in their computer anyway.
Right.
This month, not for the little logo on the outside.
Right.
Intel Inside. It's a warning. No.
Oh, boy, are you going to get letters. How come nobody ever emails him? This week's poll is about things you can do. I've been reading all these articles about stuff that's going to be in your cell phone. You know, basically, you're going to be able to do dang near everything on earth with your cell phone. So I didn't want to just get all nuts about it. So I focused in on one thing, which is surfing the web. I surfed the web on my cell phone. The choices are heck yes, no thanks, no, but I'd certainly like to, and just for all you whiners, one choice is the Macintosh. So I don't want to hear that I didn't include you Mac people this week. So But oh, boy, am I going
to
get
it's not an answer
now.
To the poll, though.
That's okay. You get to vote it's for the Mac if you wanted to, which, in fact, 13% of the people who voted already have.
See,
56 people have voted so far. No thanks is the number one, followed by the Macintosh.
I'd like to use internet on my cell phone, but it's just too dang expensive.
It's awfully expensive.
Yeah.
And most sites are not designed for good viewing on a cell phone.
And I have an itty-bitty screen.
You have a weeny-tiny screen.
Yeah, so you can get the itty-bitty screens, or you can get a big honking cell phone that has a big enough screen.
Right.
The Motorola,
Motorola Sidekick?
Yeah, Motorola and Nokia both
have. Nokia has the one that opens up, the little clamshell guy.
They have a
very
of
nice.
Great new phones coming out.
Very nice. Those are pretty nice. But, yeah, surfing the web, mainly the big thing is surfing on the web is just annoying. A cell phone. Getting certain things like, you know, your baseball scores or whatever that's all about is nice.
I use mine for AIM because I'm that addicted. You know what I'm saying? That's a nice thing about the Sidekick.
You need a 12-step program. I'm just telling you.
That's actually a big issue these days that a lot of kids doing instant messaging.
I'm not a kid.
A lot of
Oh yeah, you are.
Okay.
A lot of kids are doing instant messaging on their cell phones, and then the parents get these $1,000 bills
because they don't realize it's a per minute kind of deal.
Right.
On a lot.
A lot of cell phone plans give you, say, you know, 10 instant messages a month free, and we hear about kids all day long. We'll send hundreds of messages a day back and forth, and you know, a new way to cheat in school is IM your name. So you know, teachers be on the lookout for these little IMs.
I'm shocked that I have to actually say when I give a test, no cell phones. If I see a cell phone, you flunk.
Yep.
If it rings, you flunk.
I like your story about asking if the students want an open book or closed book test.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they're stupid enough to say open book.
Yes. Yeah, I used to give my students the choice, open book or closed book. Students always vote for an open book test, except the smart ones, because they know an open book test is going to be just a very hard, hard, hard test.
Subjective answers, not something you could easily look up.
Exactly. If it's a closed book test, I figure, well, you know, is this reasonable for them to remember and know out in the real world? But if it's an open book test, it's fair game because you can look stuff up, just like you do in the real world. So I make the tests incredibly hard. But yeah, so people are doing everything on their cell phones now. I mean, how many people, you know, think nothing of whipping out that cell phone, taking a picture, sending it to 30 people?
Well,
that's
the thing now. You know, you see things on TV where people are at concerts.
Yeah.
And, you know, years ago you had the, you know, picture cameras. Now all you see is cell phone fronts.
Yeah.
That people are taking pictures with their cell phones and stuff like that. It's kind of scary.
Well, and people are banning cell phones in certain places. Yeah. You can't take them into the gym anymore so that you're not taking pictures of people in their underwear or whatever. And you can't take them into bookstores.
A lot of
bookstores are banning cell phones because people will take pictures of articles instead of buying the magazine.
A lot of corporations, too, in my, you know, job is a traveling computer repairman. You know, I go into large companies all the time, and the security desk, do you have a camera? Do you have a camera phone? You know, leave it here because, you know, trade secrets and industrial espionage, it's a huge, you know, big problem in industry.
Mm-hmm. I have a camera phone. Not because I wanted one, but because that's what they had. When we went to renew our plan, they said, you know, you get $100 in credit.
Right.
I said, great, give me two $50 phones.
I
just want whatever you got. They didn't have it. They didn't have the next model. I got these phones that do everything, and I'm not paying for any of it. I'm not.
But you've been taking pictures of the puppies with it, I'm sure.
I take pictures of the puppies.
Yeah,
I have a picture of my wife, picture of my daughter. When they call me, it comes up on the phone. It's so cool. But I would never have bought the phone for that feature, you know? But at any rate, that's it. Surf the web on your cell phone is the choice here. And so far, the overwhelming majority of you said no thanks, followed by the Macintosh.
Right. I did just read an article on the Sony PSP, which is basically a game machine. And it plays games. In fact, I was watching a kid play it the other day. Oh, that's one of those new video things, right? Well, no. The PSP games are video. They look so good that, you know, they almost look like video. But now you can sync them with your computer and put your music on them and your address book and your contacts.
Sony has a new cell phone that uses the mini SD cards.
Yeah.
And you can put music, it becomes an MP3 player. Your cell phone is an MP3 player.
Nokia's new cell phone has a 4-gig hard drive in it.
Yeah.
The same CF-based hard drive that the Mini
uses.
That's
in the Mini iPod.
So now you can put 1,000 songs in your address book and your contacts, and it's getting to be a convergent device.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have Mike from Greece and John from Rochester on the phone. We'll be talking to them and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham's answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I have to say, I got so involved in my rant about the poll that I completely forgot to mention why my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. Thank you. And, I this is really kind of the only place I ever really advertise, AskNick.com. So I did want to mention AskNick.com. Thank you. We do have a poll, the opinion there, and as far as number six is concerned, the answer is yes. And I got the double equals as well. So, yes, I believe we're dumping the insensitive clod since nobody liked that, and we have a new Cowboy Neil of our very own. Most people aren't going to get that, and I really don't care. Our next caller is Mike from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hello. Let me get to page one. I'll keep this.
What are you, Paul Harvey?
No. I could give you that many questions.
Okay.
a quick bad pun is the day after Patch Tuesday, Crash Wednesday.
Yeah. I like it.
All right. I'm thinking about trying to resurrect an old computer I've got sitting around the house. It's a Gateway Profile, which looks like an iMac. It's got the base. It's got all the guts in it.
Yeah.
With the LCD attached to it. And it's like, if I put a new hard drive in it and got a new operating system and just stuck them in, because the hard drive in there is like 10 gigs.
Right.
So if I put something in there, put a new system in there, should the stuff in the operating system be able to recognize what's going on? Now, I know the ATA speed for the hard drive is, I'm pretty sure it's 66 on the old machine. It's probably 133 on the hard drive I've got sitting around the house. But it'll still run, right?
It should, only slower, of course.
Yeah.
You should be able to update the hard drive, assuming the form factor is correct. The real question is going to be drivers for all of the hardware devices that are built into that profile. The first thing you really need to do before you do any of this is go up to Gateway's website and look to see if you can download XP-specific drivers for the profile.
XP may have some of the drivers built into it.
Right. But just to be on the safe
side. You never
side.
Know which ones you're going to need until
right.
you need them.
On the other hand, it certainly can't hurt. If you've got a drive sitting around, install it, install the operating system, see what happens.
All right.
At the very least, you're just having a little fun with your system.
Yep. One more question. As far as operating systems, I'm trying to do this as cheaply as possible. I was on the eBay site, and somebody was offering like a Windows 2000. It says still in the package, so it's got the Microsoft documentation. That's a relatively stable system. I know there are certain ones that you don't like, the ME, like the guy was talking about earlier. And
Windows 2000 is very stable. It's also no longer really supported. There are still updates for that one. I don't think that one's completely out of support just yet. But the simple reality, well, it's twofold. First, I'm not entirely certain it's legal to just buy it from anybody. You have to buy it from a registered reseller.
And even though it says still in the packaging on the site, you may get a pirate-burned disk when it comes in the mail.
Right. In addition, Windows 2000 has been superseded by Windows 2003 and now 2005. So it's a couple of releases back. And in terms of server stuff and in terms of desktop stuff, it's been superseded by XP. So you're, again, going to find yourself back a ways in terms of updates, patches, support, security updates in particular. So, you know, the difference can't be that great between Windows 2000, no matter where you buy it, and a copy of XP Home. So I would suggest that you stick with XP Home.
Mainstream Windows 2000 support ended last month.
There you go.
Extended support will continue until 2010.
Extended meaning you pay for it. They are extending their hands into your wallet and letting you pay for it that way. Our next caller is John from Rochester, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
How you doing? I like that extended the hands into the wallet. Too.
Thank you.
That was good. Hey, I'm a recent DSL tech support hire in the local area. I won't go into details, but there's not too many providers in the area that do DSL.
Right.
On to my next question. Trying to reinstall XP because I know my system needs it. My system is hosed. It's clean from spyware. It's clean from virus, but I'm pretty sure the registry got corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Putting the Windows reinstall disk in as we speak, and I'm getting a message that saying setup cannot continue because the version of Windows on your computer is newer than the version on the CD.
Right.
Warning,
if you decide to delete the newer version, the files and settings cannot be recovered.
Right.
Your data will still be there, but it won't know about any applications that are installed, and those will have to be reinstalled as well.
Right. I understand I'm going to blow everything away, but
right.
The option to continue is grayed out.
Oftentimes you have to read through that entire message at the bottom, and then the continue will light up again. It's the same thing happens on the license agreement page. It won't just let you continue until you at least scroll through the license agreement, you know, sort of saying that you've read it.
Hold on a second. John, do you have a radio on in the background?
I can barely hear you.
Yeah, do you have a radio on in the background?
I just moved away from it.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
There's nothing to read through. It's just one screen. The only options are details, cancel, or continue. I've already looked at the details. You know, it says call Microsoft. Nothing free, of course.
Right.
And the grayed out option's not available. I just talked to Dell this morning, and of course I hung up before I got to that point. 25 minutes to wait for them, someone I could fairly understand.
It may be that the OS is too new and you can't continue and install an old OS on top of a new OS, which usually you can't. If you don't care about any of the data on the computer, you can back up a few steps, delete the partition, and make a new partition.
But that will delete all of your data.
Yeah, and I've got saved what I want saved. I'm ready to format C:\sys or whatever it was, guys.
There you go.
Yeah, back up a few steps in that installation process, and it will ask you what partition you want to install it on and give you the option of deleting that partition and making a new one, and that will do it for you.
Yeah, that's probably your best bet at this point, and then it's a brand-new machine, and you're good to go from there. So give that a try. Our next caller is Gene on a cell phone. Welcome back, Gene. What's your question?
My question is that, I'm going to hang up to hear your answer on that, is that when you get an email, sometimes you get an email from individuals, and all of a sudden it keeps duplicating itself all the time, and then you have to go right into whatever virus protection you got. What causes that to do that? Is that a virus or just a what? You know.
Well, I'm not entirely certain what you're describing, but yes, if you're talking about multiple emails from the same person.
Yes, it keeps creating itself.
The same email comes?
Yes.
Yeah, that often is a sign of a badly written virus.
The other,
to be honest,
and it could be from the other end, and it may not be from the person that says it is. A lot of viruses will mask their identity when they're sending a message out.
Right.
It could also be too, and this is very much more common on dial-up than it is on broadband. When you tell your mail reader to get mail, the mail will start coming in, and then when you get all the mail, your computer says, "Okay, I've got it all," and the server says, "Okay, I know you got it all."
Then it erases it from the server.
Right. If the mail event doesn't finish accurately or completely, then the server says, oh, he didn't get it all. I'll send it to them again.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so the next time you check to get your mail, you get the same messages again.
See, I have Roadrunner, and this happened to me a while ago and finally got it cleared up. But I was just wondering what actually caused that because I got a multitude of the same ones coming in all the time.
That could be
it. It could be a glitch between you and them that they didn't know that they didn't get the acknowledgement that you received it, so they kept it to send to you again. That's actually a feature, but it certainly gets annoying. Or it could, it depends entirely on the email. If it's the type.
Is there any way to prevent that?
No,
not really.
Stop using email.
Well, yeah. But if it's a virus thing, then no, there's nothing you can do to stop it because it's not your problem. And if it's a glitch from Roadrunner, you can give them a call and tell them it's happening, and they'll check to see if there's a problem on their system somewhere and fix it.
You can also log into the webmail front end, which lets you look at your messages on the web rather than downloading them to your computer, and lets you manually delete the messages you have already received. And that sometimes also helps if there's a message that's stuck.
Right.
We see it a lot with dial-up, again, as I mentioned, or also if you have a slower broadband connection. If someone sends you a huge file, you hit receive on your computer, and it just sits there. And especially Outlook, which doesn't have a very good progress bar.
Not very good.
So you think your computer is broken or you know, it's not working, so you force Outlook to quit. And then the other end says, oh, you didn't get the message. I'll send it to make sure they get it again next time.
There's also the fact that some viruses, again, badly written ones, send out badly formed email in an attempt to stick a virus on your machine, and therefore it gets stuck in the queue at the server end.
Right, so logging
it's not that the folks running the server have done anything wrong. It's just a badly formed email. So again, running webmail, you can kill that one, and whatever's backed up behind it will come to you.
And all of the ISPs have a webmail feature. It's usually webmail.isp name, or you can use a generic webmail service like Mail2Web to log into the webmail. Webmail is also nice if you're away from your computer, you know, visiting friends or on vacation. You can still log in to the webmail and check mail while you're away from your own computer.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Gene. We appreciate it. Our next call, David, high up on a mountaintop in Pennsylvania. Welcome, David. I almost broke into Daniel Boone, or Davy Crockett, rather. How are you, David?
Doing great, guys. Pretty clear here on the mountaintop today. I can see pretty much all the way up to Corning.
Wow.
Nice.
Hey, guys. I'm calling with a question really about Microsoft Backup, but I just want to interject something. You were speaking earlier with a caller on Windows 2000. I was on the phone with Rob. I'm not sure you might have mentioned this, but I think people using Windows 2000 out there who might not be aware of it should know that Microsoft about 10 days ago they released the SP4 roll-up.
You're right.
And you know, for people using Windows 2000, that's kind of a big deal because there's not going to apparently be any SP5.
Right.
Yeah, that's the last one. And if
that
you
coincided
have Service Pack 4 is what he's talking about for Windows 2000.
And coincided with the June 30th deadline.
Yeah, basically, this is it. The last one you're getting. Shut up. Move on.
Hey guys, moving on to my question. Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't saying shut up to you, David. I was saying
Microsoft says you should have upgraded to XP long ago anyway.
Right. Exactly. And here's your last one.
I use both of them actually, but there are reasons that I like Windows 2000. I also run XP Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, on Microsoft Backup, I've pretty well had it with Microsoft Backup.
You should.
I just got a new tape drive. I need you to tell me, not two or three substitutes for Microsoft Backup. I know there are many, but what are the two or three best substitutes for Microsoft Backup when you're backing up with tape?
There's actually a program I've been using called NT Backup Assistant, which supplements Microsoft Backup and makes it work right. It switches tapes when it's supposed to. It doesn't overwrite the wrong named tape. And it was fairly inexpensive. I think it's NT Backup Assistant is the URL.
Backupassist.com?
Yeah, it could be it too. It's a company in Australia, I think it was. But it makes NT Backup Assistant work right under the NT-based OSs, including XP. And my biggest issue is we are running it on a 2000 server, and looking at a server backup program has a comma in the price.
Right, right. Veritas makes a terrific program. I don't know what the cost of that is for a home user, though. It's not cheap.
Most of the home backup programs are in the $100 range. We also like Retrospect from Dance.
Retrospect is nice.
D-A-N-T-Z.
Yes.
And the Veritas backup exec is basically a superset of the NT Backup Assistant. NT Backup itself was written by Veritas as a bare bones backup to build into Windows, and then they sort of expect you to buy the full version afterwards.
Right.
And that backup exec has been bounced around from company to company to company for a long time. I guess it's still owned by Veritas now. Seagate was running it for a while.
Yeah, definitely. I do like Veritas software. It's pretty nice. It's a pretty nice product. But
guys,
like I said,
what I'm doing with the tape, actually, I'm not doing a backup of my entire system. I'm using it to back up certain very large files.
Right, and that's what Veritas does. It lets you set specific things at a specific time to back them up. I don't know what the name of their home product is, but I know they have one. So I would look on Symantec's website for the Veritas stuff. I think that's your best bet. I really like their product for the enterprise, and I'm sure it's equally as good for the home. We got to take a quick break, but we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And you all know that soundbite's on 1180 WHAM.
Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Dave, you'll be Steve then for the rest of the day. Steve, you found some extra stuff for Dave?
Yeah, it looks like the Veritas backup exec, Symantec just bought Veritas last week.
Right.
And the backup exec is pretty much enterprise server only. Yeah, so the Dance has a version of Retrospect for individual users.
Again, that's D-A-N-T-Z.
D-A-N-T-Z. Found one called Backup My PC that I've used before from Stompsoft, and that's about $60. And then, of course, Symantec has their Go Back, which is sort of a rewinding tool. It takes a snapshot of your hard drive every X minutes, and then when you need to, you can go back to one of those snapshots, but it just... I've always felt it just overwhelms your hard drive.
Or I suppose you can download some Unix tools for the PC and just tar everything to your hard drive.
Yeah, tar everything, yeah. So, you know, trying to back up, to automate single file backups, you basically need a sort of a higher-end backup program that has scheduling and automation features. Because those are the features that specifically don't work in NT Backup built into Windows. The scheduling doesn't work well, and especially for tapes, it doesn't know when you switch a tape. Because you have to tell the removable storage manager, this big mess with it. So that NT Backup Assistant I found works really well, especially on 2000 server, and wasn't as horribly expensive as other server products.
Right. But yeah, really for individuals, there aren't a lot of good solutions for backup. I tend to move everything over to, I put everything on a server. On my small network, and then that one rsyncs automatically to another machine.
It's a really nice
over the internet, actually.
Really nice product called Silver Keeper for the Mac. That's a free scheduled incremental backup program. It's published by Lessee, who make backup hard. Well, they make hard drives that you can use for backup.
Right.
And it's really nice. Comes on the hard drive to do your backup with, but they don't have a PC version.
Right.
So we've been on this quest to find a decent, inexpensive PC backup program, and basically we haven't yet.
Well, there are a couple local companies that let you back it up to the internet, and they put it on their servers and back it up. A couple local companies that do that. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Jim from Rochester. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi. I've got a problem with Safari.
Uh-huh.
Filling in an online form on a secure website.
Right.
Get down to putting in my zip code. Put in the 5 digits, and if I either tab to the next field or hit return, it truncates it and drops the first digit.
It may be some of your autofill properties that's trying to remember forms you fill out so that you start typing one thing and it fills everything else in for you.
If you use something other than Safari, do you have this problem?
No. I've only tried an alternate once. I used Explorer.
And that worked?
That worked.
Yeah. If you go into the Safari preferences, there's an autofill option.
Right.
And you can remove autofill options from forms that you may have filled out, or you can tell it not to use autofill at all.
Okay.
So you manually type out each block of the form for you.
Right. I was just thinking about that this morning. Maybe I'd try that.
Yeah. So one of the things I run into with those autofills is when your zip code, you know, which is 14-something,
right.
and your street address, which might be 14-something, if some of your fields are similar in text, then the autofill gets confused about which one you were actually wanting to fill in there. Yeah, so removing that autofill website from the autofill preferences or just turning off autofill completely might fix it for you.
Okay, I'll try that.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
Right, thank you.
I want you to notice I did not go into my Safari rant this week, which is really, and I know, it's really my KHTML rant. Our next caller will have to wait for just a couple of minutes. We have a couple of people on the line. Gil and Kurt are on the line. Hold on. We'll get back to you as soon as we come back. But we have a surprise break. At least it was a surprise to me.
That was never 10 minutes just then.
It was a surprise to me, I said. Because everything is, every day is a new day for me. And we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you, and just as much fun as we can possibly have on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When they PCs to Max, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites, and our next caller is Gil from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Gil. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Good show, as always.
Thank you.
So recently I bought a mini Mac, and I also bought one of these hard drive enclosures, portable USB hard drive enclosures, and put a hard drive in it and formatted it on a Windows XP machine. So I formatted the drive first. And I tried to set permissions and things as in a vanilla state as I could so it wouldn't have any permissions that would prohibit anything. I actually did this twice. But when I plug it into the mini Mac and try to write a file to it, it says read-only.
Did you format it FAT32 or NTFS?
NTFS.
That's the problem. The Macintosh can only read an NTFS file, can't write to it. And that's because of the Samba... No, not Samba. Samba's networking. What's the Unix thing that lets you read Windows volumes?
Samba.
Oh, part of Samba, too? Okay.
Yeah,
that's I believe they fixed that in Tiger 10.4.
Okay.
So that you can write to an NTFS volume. But it's part of the Unix layer that lets it read Windows volumes. FAT32 can read and write no problem, but NTFS could only read.
Okay.
So theoretically upgrading to Tiger will fix that.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, actually it's a chicken and egg problem because the reason I thought I'd use the disk is to back up everything before I upgraded to Tiger.
If you format it FAT32, you should be fine.
Yeah, which I could do on the mini Mac itself.
Yep. Well, yeah.
Exactly.
Or the PC.
Okay, great.
Okay.
I think that does it. Thanks,
Thanks, Gil. Our next question is Kurt from Irondequoit. Welcome, Kurt. What's your question?
I've actually got an answer as to backup.
I love answers. Yes!
What works for me is I've got a USB connected 200-gig hard drive, which I formatted FAT32, broke it up into partitions, and then use a Cronus True Image, which will back up both Windows XP and Linux partitions. And
Cronus True Image?
It works.
Cool.
So anyone wants to try that, it beats the heck out of tapes because a lot of times... Tapes don't. You can't get the data. You can write it, but you can't get it back.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. And thank you so much, Kurt. That's great.
And tape is kind of slow anyway.
Tape is slow, and it's linear, and that's the problem. It's serial. Our next caller, Sal from Fairport. Welcome, Sal. What's your question?
Got an answer for your Safari problem. Sounds like he's got ZIP+4 in his address book. Card.
That could be, too. It's only expecting a 5-digit zip code, and his
exactly.
autofill is putting in 9 or 10 digits, including the hyphen.
Exactly, and even trying to take out the last four doesn't work. I changed my ZIP+4 to ZIP, just the regular zip code, and it fixed the problem. You know, I was having problems logging into certain websites for that same reason.
Thanks.
There you go.
So
that's a great answer, Sal. Thanks.
The autofill reading too much of your zip code from your address book.
Exactly, and then the website truncating it. Our next caller is Frank from the middle of nowhere. Greece, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Good morning. Good afternoon. I recently bought a digital camera with his FineFix software.
Right.
Okay. And I want to see if I can put some pictures on a writable disk,
right?
And didn't work. It looks as though it's going through the burning process correctly. So, and then I wasn't able to read it back in my DVD player. And then I tried it with the Neural software that came with my machine, and that didn't work either. And the only way I was able to do it was just by the old-fashioned drag and drop.
Yeah,
the real basic method.
The Windows desktop-based burning software, which is a subset of one of the EasyCD, DirectCD, will conflict with other burning software. Oftentimes you have to turn off support for the drag and drop burning so you can run Nero or EasyC Creator or other burning programs.
Yeah, because they interfere with each other, so pick one.
Right.
Right. And, of course, the Windows one's always running in the background, so you don't know that it's running until you need to go turn it off.
Sometimes you can help that in your authoring program, like Nero, is go through all the files you want, click the burn button, and when it says insert a blank disk, then insert the blank disk.
Right.
If you insert it too soon, Windows itself grabs a hold of it.
Right. Well, it looks like we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be at the Greece Public Library tomorrow night at 7 o'clock and back here next Sunday at 11. It's just a week full of sound bites on 1180 WHAM. Want to play something?